After such a electrifying beginning of a shmooze, I hope I will not bore you, but instead I hope I will fire you up for a enjoyable shmooze. Just needed that as an introduction for the Rashi. You'll ask Eli Teichman, he'll explain that one to you. In this week's Pasha, Rabbi Isai, we have an event that literally changes the entire world. Last year, I had the privilege of teaching to some of you, as I tell many other machanchim, learning from my talmidim, mikom alamda hiskalti, umatalmida yaisa mikulam. We learned Parshas Noach. The Rishonim in Parshas Noach explained to us something which perhaps today many, many scientists have questions with: the formation of Earth, global warming and changings that are taking place. How could things be millions of years old? Must be the world was millions of years old. If you look inside various Rishonim, the Sepurnu, the Ramban, just to name a few, in different psukim throughout Parshas Noach, whether in the beginning or later on after the Mabul, with the Rishonim explain psukim of Shinuyim, literally changes that take place inside of the world. Stars moved from different places, planets moved, the Earth itself stopped its orbit for an entire year. It's hard to understand what that means, but that's almost what the Pasuk tells us. Major changes. There is a candidate whose name we will not mention, but the one word that we constantly hear from him is change, 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 change. There are major changes that took place in Parshas Noach, inside of the world. But I want to focus today on not on a global change, but on an individual's persons who changed. Chazal tell us, if we take a look at the beginning of Parshas Noach, we have a description of a certain individual who is the Tzadik Hador, the giant of the generation. Ela told us Noach, Noach ish Tzadik tamim hayu b'dayraisav. The Pasuk immediately describes Noach, this 600-year-old man, as someone who was a tzaddik, tamim. There is no one in the entire Torah who has such shvachim next to each other, being called an ish, tzaddik, tamim. And the pasuk concludes, es alekim is alech noach. So if I was one of those that make the Torah cards in the year 1656, then probably the Torah card that I would try to market and sell, there probably was not so many people that were interested in having such a card at that time, would be Noach. The Torah gives us such shvachim about him. And yet, after the Mabul, which we would expect Noach to grow from such a tragedy that affects his entire family, his friends, his associates, the entire world, the Pasuk tells us a transformation that takes place inside of Noach. The Pasuk tells us, the entire earth was populated by these three sons of Noach. The Pasuk says, the Pasuk now has a different title on the doorfront of Noach. He is called Noach Ish Ho'adoma. He is no more the Ish, Tzadik, Tamim, Eselakim, Esalech, Noach. Rather now he becomes the Ish Adoma. He is the man that's the farmer. He works now on the agriculture of the land. But moreover, at least the way Rashi learns, the word Vayochel, Rashi says Vayochel, comes from a Loshon of Osa Atzmai Chulin. He made himself debased. He made himself chulin. He made himself cheapened. So if you look inside Rashi doesn't say over here that he didn't bring a carbon right away. Rashi doesn't say over here that he didn't sit down and learn Mishnayos right away. You know what Rashi says? Rashi says, Shahoyloi la'asik tchilom netiyah acheres. Yes, he gets out of the teva, But the first thing that he should not have done was plant a vineyard. The first thing that he should have done is perhaps plant asparagus. I don't know, maybe to work on apple trees. That's what Rashi says. Rashi doesn't say that he didn't say till him as soon as he walked out. Rashi says, the shahoylo la'asik t'chilo n'tiyah cheres. For that, he's called an ish adoma? For that, he's called a man that's a farmer? And Chazal, even the Midrashim here, speak very lowly of this transformation that Noach went through. Moreover, which is more difficult, if you look inside Rashi, in Parshas Bereishis, where we are introduced for the first time to Noach. Where did Noach get his name? So Rashi says, Rashi says, when we find the Rashi, Rashi says he was called Noach. Why? Because he made it Noach for the Olam. He made it easy for the world to work on the land. Noach introduced Klei Charisha, a new industry of farming tools, was something that Noach introduced to the world at that time. So for that he is called Noach. That means Noach started off as a farmer. He ended off as a farmer. Yes, the Torah does say in the middle he was called Noach Isha Tzadik Tavim Hayibadei Raisav. But he was before a farmer. And he ended off a farmer. So why do Chazal criticize Noach to such an extent that they say beforehand he was called an Ish Elikim. He was before he was called a Tamim and a Tzadik. And he lost that whole Madrega to be called an Ish Adama. He started off as an Ish Adama. That's what he was. And he remained an Ish Adama. Yes, the Torah also gives a shvach that he was a person that was a Salakim Isalech Nayach. He was a Tamim Hayibadei Raisav. So what is exactly this change that takes place inside Nayach's life? Seemingly what he was before is what he was at the end. The Medrash compares Nayach as well to another individual. And that individual is someone by the name of Moshe Rabbeinu. The first time we are introduced to Moshe Rabbeinu, he also has a term, a title. The title he is called is Ish Mitzri. Later on, in the beginning of Pasha Zay Sabracha, we find the Torah refers to Moshe Rabbeinu as Ish Elikim. So we see that Moshe Rabbeinu starts off as Ish Mitzri, and eventually he becomes Ish Elikim. Noach starts off as an Ish Elikim, and eventually he becomes an Ish Adama. Which I find quite difficult also in understanding Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, who called him Ish Mitzri? You know who called Moshe Rabbeinu Ish Mitzri? He didn't call himself Ish Mitzri. The nice Yisrael, when they came to their father, and their father said to them, who saved you? So they said, Ish Mitzri, Hitzilani. There was an Egyptian, he was dressed in his Egyptian attire, right? He saved us, that's what they said. Moshe Rabbeinu never referred to himself as Ish Mitzri. Yet the Medrash says, look at Moshe Rabbeinu. He started off as Ish Mitzri, and later on, he becomes an Ish Elikim. The Chayra, Moshe Rabbeinu was always an Ish Elikim. The Pasuk tells us when Moshe Rabbeinu was born, the entire room that Moshe Rabbeinu was born into was filled with Or, Nismalim Or. The Rabbeinu B'chai says that this room was filled from Or because Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to be born on Shavuos. Moshe Rabbeinu was born at Zayin Adar. He was born prematurely due to the Gezeris of the Mitzriim, and he was hidden for 3 months. And now when he came out, when he finally was recognized by the world, it happened to be Shavuos. So the potential of Avraham Avinu was to be Mekabel, the Torah. So the whole room, says the Rabbeinu B'chai, was filled with Or. Moshe Rabbeinu was an Ish Elikim from the onset. And yet the Medrash says he started off as an Ish Mitzri and he became an Ish Elikim. So the same question that I have with Noach, I have also with Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Noach seemingly started off as an Ish Adama and he ended off with an Ish Adama. There's a title that as well he was called a Tzadik Tamim, but bottom line was what he started seemingly didn't change. And Moshe Rabbeinu as well, what he started, he also didn't change. And the Medrash does say on both of them, look at the changes that took place, the transformation between Noach and what he was to what he became, to what Moshe Rabbeinu was and to what he became. So to the answer to this, Rabbi Sai, I would like to just suggest a certain Yesod A number of years ago, about 13, 14 years ago, I took my share to Baltimore, and Rabbi Fran was speaking. Of course, we enjoyed first kosher bite, the Shalai Lishma, and then we went to hear Rabbi Fran, and it became a little bit more Lishma, and then we stopped off for Slurpees, and then it became even more Lishma, and then we had it back home, and we had a late opening, and then it was Mamish Lishma. And that's what we did in the old days. And Rabbi Fran addressed some of these points. And if I could remember correctly, I'd like to share with you what he said. The aside that he said, and it's something which is extremely relevant to everybody sitting inside this room. We are right after the Yom Tov of Sukkot, and prior to that, we had the month which is called the Esan, the month which is very powerfully Esan, Yerech Esanim. It's the month which has a lot of energy inside of it. Rosh Hashanah, that's Esmei Tshuva, and Yom Kippur. There's a day that we reflect a little bit about Yom Kippur, which seemingly has nothing to do with Yom Kippur. Not only does it have nothing to do with Yom Kippur, Benji. Okay. Not only does it have nothing to do with Yom Kippur, it is the opposite of Yom Kippur. You know what that day is, Rabbi Sai? It's called Purim. I mean, if I wanted to compare the closest day of Purim, then I personally would say it would probably be Pesach, right? Because you drink four cups. Most of us, or some of us, drink something like that when it comes Purim time. I mean, talking about soda, right? Soda, things like that, right? But you know, if we're comparing the gaiety and the excitement and the drinking and the celebration, we have other days that we drink Hanukkah, we drink milk, so we celebrate with latkes. I don't know, Pesach, you have thin latkes called matzahs. Now you have potato latkes. If you want to make a comparison, the Yom Tov not to compare Yom Kippur to would not definitely not be Purim. And yet Chazal tell us, there's a beautiful piece from the Pachid Yitzchak. He says that Yom Kippurim, it's based on a Goyin, is Yom Kippurim. Yom Kippur is compared to Purim. It's compared to Purim? What does it have to do with Purim? Yom Kippur is the opposite of what Purim is. And Rav Huttner explains in the Pachad Yitzchak, Rabbi Isai, if you want to know who and what was accomplished on Yom Kippur, see what an individual is on Purim. Comes Yom Kippur, we're inside of the Beis Medrash, we're inside the shul, we're inside the yeshiva, wherever we're davening, and we're wearing white garments, and we have our talesim on, and we're fasting, and people are screaming, Avinu Malkeinu, and we're very, very sincere. But are we really sincere? Or really being challenged and tested just for the moment? And immediately afterwards, we're going to go back to our behaviors that we had before Yom Kippur. Let's test that when the guard is down. Yoel, it's wake up time. All right? Let's test up when the guard is down. When the guard is down, and I'm not fasting, and right now I'm drinking, and I'm very, very happy about the salvation of the Jewish people, how do I act then? That's when the real me comes out. The true self, the true kambolis that I made. I want to tell you something. I don't know if you boys ever seen this. I know I lived in Yeshiva in Philadelphia for 4 years. And we had Musa Seder every single day from 7:15, from quarter to 7 to 7:15. And we had a Rosh Yeshiva, Shavrifu Shlema, who was very, very makbid on learning Musa, on educating us and developing ourselves, both in Midas and in Yerushalayim, and many other areas as well. The greatest Musa Seder was coming to our Shiva's house, Purim, at night. If you walked in there, and I have some pictures of it, yeah, the boys are dressed up, and boys are laughing, and they're singing. But there was more tshuva that was done on Purim than I even believe that was done on Yom Kippur. Because the true self came out. The true kabbalas, the commitments that we wanted to make, and that we did make, and that we stuck to, came out on Purim. The essence of who you are sometimes comes out when the guard is down. Not when the guard is completely up. Yom Kippur, it's completely up. Purim, it's completely down. How do we know who Noach was? Who was the real Noach? Was the real Noach the Ish Elakim, Es Elakim Misalech Noach, was that the real Noach? Or was that the Noach for the time being? Who was the real Moshe Rabbeinu? Was the real Moshe Rabbeinu the Ish Elakim, the Eved Elakim, or was he the Ish Mitzri? Let's see how Noach is when the guard is down. And then you could see who the real Noach is. Immediately after the Mabel, when everything is starting over afresh, there's no one around, there's no peer pressure, it's you. You're starting out. There's no one that's filming you, there's no one that's recording you. You could do whatever you want. Let me see what you start out doing. If the first thing that you start out doing is the thing that brought down the entire world, the activities of drunkenness and looseness of behavior, then that is a reflection of who you really are. Yes, you could be on the outside, very religious, be inside the Gadol cards, and everybody admires who you are, but not necessarily that's really, really who you are. If you, a person, wakes up in the morning, and the first thing he says is, oh, it's terrible, I have to get up today, I'd much rather be in bed, versus, Maidani lefanecha, melech hai v'kayim, shechazati b'nishmasi. If that's the first thing that goes into his mind, as soon as he wakes up, I thank God that I'm alive, and I have now an opportunity to serve him, and to enjoy the pleasures that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has presented in this world for me, that shows who that person is. Noach's moida ani, the pasuk says over here, was vayochal Noach. The first thing that Noach did upon leaving the teva was not moidani lefanecha. That means originally when Noach was the ish adama, he was also then an ish adama. Yes, he was a great man, and I'm not taking away from the greatness of Noach. He was 100% at tzaddik tamim ayyub adereisav. As we know, Rashi tells us two different shotim what that means ayyub adereisav. But the essence of Noach over here, the Torah focuses on. Moshe Rabbeinu, yes, there was a period of time he had to dress the part of an Ish Mitzri. But at the same time, who was the essence of Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu's essence was an Ish Elakim. No matter what situation he was in, even when he was in Mitzrayim, and he had to work or he had to be part of the royal family for a period of time, and he looked into the exterior, he was a Mitzri. The Torah tells us who he really was. When the guard was down, Moshe Rabbeinu still was the Ish Elakim. I want to share with you a certain sight that I saw. I know Rabbi Nyman asked me every once in a while when we give the shmooze here to share with you some of the things that I experienced when I was in Europe. I want to share with you somebody who you might say, well, I could relate to that a little bit. You know why? Because this was a youngster who had very little Torah and mitzvahs knowledge. He was exposed to it, but his yediyas, his knowledge, was very limited. He was only 5 years old. So how much can we expect of a five-year-old when it comes to observance, knowledge, love of Torah and mitzvahs? Very limited. The only thing is he happened to be the nephew of the Rosh Hashiva Intels. The Rosh Hashiva Intels was someone by the name of Rav Yitzchak Bloch. His nephew was a five-year-old boy. His name was Moshe Bloch. Intels, sadly to say, when the Nazis came there and tore down the yeshiva, the first thing the Nazis did, Intels, was they took out the yeshiva bachrim, they took out the Rosh Hashivas, and they killed them. They killed them. Took the men, the bachrim, the boys. There's a whole story about the Ritzicha that took place on Chof Aleph Tammuz, if I'm not mistaken. And they killed out the men inside the community of Tells. They kept the women and the children alive for a number of weeks. And then, sadly, tragically to say, it came the day of the roundup of the women and the children, and they too were going to be murdered by the Nazis, Yimach Shemam. This little Moshe Bloch was marching together with his mother, his grandmother, his sisters, and I think two of his brothers, and of course, many of the other women and children that were being marched to their death. As he passed the yeshiva of Telz, which today, it's a building, but there's very little to see inside of that building. As he walked past the building, he ran inside, little Maishala, a five-year-old, he ran inside the building of Telz. And the Nazi guards who saw this little boy running there realized he really can't escape. There's no place to escape. The whole town was surrounded. And they were wondering, what is this little youngster going to do inside that building? So they figured they'll wait, give him like 2 minutes, and then they'll come out with their dogs or whatever it is, and they'll take him out. About a minute later, or 2 minutes later, little Moshe Bloch walks out of the Beis Medrash, and he's carrying some sidurim, some svarim, pair tefillin, and he joins his mother, carrying this little load, little package. And to the guards, and of course to his mother, it was very strange. I mean, learning, he wasn't going to start learning right now. He barely was able to read Siddur. What is he doing with this little package? So his mother asked him this question. And this little Moshe LeBlach, 5 years old, responded, I know where we are going right now. We're all going to Avinu Shebaas Shamayim. We're going up to our Father in Heaven. I've never had the opportunity to learn Siddur, to learn Chumash, to put on tefillin. But the only thing I do have is the ability to carry the mitzvahs. The mitzvahs that would have been observed by myself, I could carry them up to Avinu Shebaas Shamayim. And with that, he walked eventually to a big, big pit where he, his mother, and many others from the town of Telz were murdered by the Nazis. That youngster might have been someone an ish, b'li Torah mitzvahs. He was an ish elokim. He understood where he was going. He understood the barometer of what is important and what is not important. The difference between a Moshe Rabbeinu and the difference between a Noach. The difference between ourselves, when we wake up inside of the morning, are we ready to flip over right away back to sleep? Or do I say today is a privileged day that I can put on my tefillin? I can daven. Moida ani lefanecha. Let me share with you a story. A friend of Rabbi Teitelbaum at his chasana, the beautiful chasana that we attended, mentioned to me this story, and I would like to share it with you. Of course, we might say, well, Moshe, he was raised in such a great, great family. But, you know, I don't have such an exposure. Can I relate to such a thing like that, that maybe I'm not the greatest, but at the same time, my focus can be similar to an Ish Elokim? There was a young boy who was learning in a day school. Not even a day school. He would come on Sunday to a school, I think it was in Norfolk, Virginia. They have, a Sunday school program. We'll make up his name. I don't remember his name. We'll call him Howie Weissman. Okay? Good old Howie would come every Sunday. They had a Sunday program, and he would go to the Sunday school program. He was no more than 11 years old at the time, and his Rebbe, we'll call him Rabbi Dorfman, right? Rabbi Dorfman came in. There's six or seven young boys and girls sitting there together, and he's discussing what they're going to learn over the course of the year. And after very quickly going through certain basics that they had covered previous Sundays of previous years, he said, you know what, this year we are going to learn the Aseres HaDibros. And he asked the boys, the students there, girls as well, does anybody here know what the Aseres HaDibros? And not one of the youngsters sitting there ever heard of the Aseres HaDibros. They heard of the Ten Commandments, but they never heard of the Aseres HaDibros. Fine. Then he said, "Have you already heard of the Ten Commandments?" And one boy said, "Yeah, I watched a movie." And so they already were familiar with a little of the Ten Commandments. And then he tried to get out from them how many boys and girls knew what the Ten Commandments were. and some started to guess, oh, is that keeping kosher? Is that, no, that's not one of them. What about, oh, belief in God. Oh, yeah, that's one of belief in God. Wearing a yarmulke. No, that's not one of the Ten Commandments. And slowly, oh, don't kill. Yeah, slowly, between all the guesses, they were able to put together about 6-7 of the Aseret HaDibros. He filled in for the other four. And he told them, this year, the focus of our Sunday program is to learn the Aseret HaDibros. Wonderful. Beautiful. And when he taught the Aseret HaDibros, he went to various chazals that describe exactly what took place by Matan Torah, the Anand, the fire, the clouds that covered the mountain, Kofalim HaKegigas, how Hashem lifted up the Har Sinai. And he went through a very, very vivid description of Kabbalah HaTorah as he went through it. One of the things that he explained to the boys, of course, is that the Torah is not like a man-made book. It wasn't put together by Art Scroll. It wasn't put together by some printing company. It was something that was written by HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chvodo v'atzmo. Hashem himself was the one that wrote, if we could use that term, Kaviyocha HaKadosh Baruch Hu wrote the Luchos. And this is what he shared with them. And then our good friend Howie Weissman one day came to his Rebbe. Boys, it's wake-up time. Baruch, wake-up time. Little vecking. All right. Little Howie Weissman turns to his Rebbe one day and says, Rebbe, you know what I'd like to do? I'm a little bit of a carpenter. You know, I went to camp Binyan Olam, whatever, right? Binyan Torah, right? That other camp, right? Red shirt. All right. And I went to, I enjoy carpentry. I enjoy making things with my hands. I would like to make for you, before the end of the year, I want to make for you a luchos. You know, many years ago, 1998, I was teaching here in the yeshiva, so I had a shtender that I used to have. Now I have a different shtender. I used to have a shtender in my shiur room, and one day I came inside the shiur room, and much to my very dismay, my shtender laid on the floor. It was shattered in pieces, and I walked in, and I was shocked, and then I spoke to the boys, and I found out what happened, and they saw how upset I was that they broke my shtender. And then I brought in a little, one of these little $2, you know, fold-up ones and things like that. Just sit in your pocket afterwards. And I guess they felt a little bit bad that that's what they did. And the last day of school, I got tipped off. Rebbe, somebody made for you a shtender. And I was like, wow, wait, that's great. Somebody made a shtender. I was so happy. It was wonderful. And I walked into the shiur room, and there's this small little shtender that opens up. And I just had to hide my... I was so excited that they made a shtender. They made this little portable shtender. Like, really, I wouldn't have too much use for it. I use it on a tissue paper when I sit on the floor, literally. Now my son Huda uses it. And then they surprised me, and they pulled out from the side a gorgeous, magnificent shtender that was made by Benji Katz's brother, right? And I still use it till today in the shul. But it was beautiful. It was a work of art. Right, it was a tremendous accomplishment. So here this Howie Weissman turns to his Rebbe, says, Rebbe, I'm going to make for you an Aseret HaDibros. All right? Nice thing, nice suggestion. He had no idea what he was going to make for him. Days went by, weeks went by, months went by, no project. You know, it's like my little shtender, right? But it was even smaller than that. Nothing. And every once in a while, Benji would come, Howie would come to his Rebbe and say, Rebbe, you know, it's coming along very nicely. I'm almost finished with the project. Couldn't understand why. He doesn't know what he was making, but it should take months. I mean, even a Camp Binyan Olam, it didn't take months to make an Aseret HaDibros. Like, what's, just have to carve out and put an olive base, gimel, whatever he was putting there. Finally, almost the last day of the summer program, months after they started, little Howie walks inside with a wooden, two plaques that had on side of them the words, Anoichi, I don't know if I had the whole Aseret HaDibros, Anoichi, and Lo Yielecha, Kabed, whatever it said, Loi, Loi Sirtzach, I don't know what words he put in, but basically he had five Dibros on one side and five Dibros on the other side, and it was beautiful. It was beautiful. The only thing is that the Rebbe had a little problem with, why did it take 7 months to make such a project? It's not a big deal to carve out letters on a piece of wood. I mean, for me, it's a big deal. But if you know a little bit the carpentry, I have a different camp, right? But if you know a little of the carpentry skills, then you're able to make a piece of wood and carve out some letters. Listen to what little Howie did And I'll ask you, is he an Ish Elohim or is he an Ish Adama? See, his Rebbe told him that the Luchais were made totally be'etzba Elohim. It was made by the finger of God. No man tampered with. There was no rabbi that was sitting there and writing the Aseres HaDibros. It was HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chvaydai uva'atzmai that made the image and the images and the words on the Luchais. And therefore, little Howley turned to his Rebbe and said, Rebbe, I wanted to do the same thing for my Luchos. The Luchos that I was going to make from you was going to be directly from the hand of God. And the Rebbe looks at him and says, I don't know what you're talking about. And he pulls out from his pocket a little magnifying glass. And he said, Rebbe, every moment that I had, every free moment over the last 7 months, when the sun was out and I had the ability to sit outside on my porch, I took out my magnifying glass and I let God's power, of course, it's not literally God, but God's power, the Shemesh, the sun, to carve out every single letter inside of these Dibros that I'm presenting to you. Can you imagine that, Rabbi Isai? The patience, the diligence, the love, the respect that this young Howie Weissman, who is totally irreligious, today he's a very religious person. But when he was 12 years old, he knew nothing. He came from an irreligious family. But he had the focus. He wasn't an Ish Adama. He might have worked carpentry. He was an Ish Elohim. His focus, his tachlis, was to do as best as he could as an Eved Hashem. We, Rabbi Yisai, are starting a new Zman, starting a new year, basically. We've had a big break now from Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot. It's an opportunity. It's an opportunity for us to focus on ourselves, who we really are, and which direction are we going to go in. There's nothing wrong, Rabbi Isaac, to say, look, I want to be an accountant one day. One person wants to be an accountant. One person wants to be a lawyer. I always try to cheer, tell the boys, one day you might be a lawyer. You have to be able to analyze, think things out. There's nothing wrong with being a lawyer. There's nothing wrong with being a doctor. Nothing wrong with being a... The question is, what am I first? Am I a Jew first and an accountant second? Or am I an accountant first and a Jew second? That's the question. And those questions are answered by us with those challenges every single day. From the moment that I wake up in the morning, is my focus, let me check my email? Or is my focus, let me run to Davin so I could Davin Bekavana? And then I'll check my email. What is my focus? When we become adults, and later on we're going to be getting envelopes. Some of them are going to be stock portfolios. Do I run right away to the mail to check my stock portfolio? Or do I run to check my son's progress report? Or his Rebbe's comments came in the mail? What do I put my focus in? What becomes the Ikar? And what becomes the Tefillin? Let me just end off with one last story, and a machshava, and then we'll say a good Shabbos. When I was in Eretz Yisrael a number of years ago, I was schmoozing with a particular Yid. He was a Russian. Something that some of us maybe could relate to over here. He came over. He came to Eretz Yisrael in the late 1980s, if I'm not mistaken. That's what he told me. Someone that was totally irreligious. Totally irreligious. And he studied. My grandmother, Zazai Gazon, she was living at that time in Rehov Haran, which is in Yerushalayim and near the Groshul and near the Beis Medrash, where Shlomo Zalman and where Shlomo Shvadron used to give Shiurim to Balabatim. This Russian, again, we'll give him a nice name, Ivan, come on, help me out with a nice Russian name, Kasawatsky. Okay, Kasawatsky, Ivan Kasawatsky. Let's call him Ivan for short, Ivan the Great. Okay, good old Ivan. He came to Eretz Yisrael knowing absolutely nothing. The only thing he knew was that he was Jewish. But he made a Kabbalah. And the Kabbalah was that if he was able to get out of Russia, when he came to Israel, he comes to Eretz Yisrael, he's going to start to learn. something that was stolen from him. He was deprived of for all his years. When he gets to Israel, he's going to start to learn. Starting with Aleph Beis, and then whatever he can learn, he's going to learn. He was an engineer by trade. When he came to Israel, say let to say, I don't know, I've learned over the years that almost every Russian, you ask them what they do, they're all engineers. I don't know. But anyway, he was an engineer, and he at that time was cleaning houses. So he went from this very respectable position to a person who was basically an ozeret or an ozer. I don't know what they called men who clean houses. Right, in America, I guess they call him also type of an engineer. Right? What do they call I don't call them janitors anymore. What are they called again? Custodian engineer. Right, custodian engineer. So he was a private custodian engineer. Okay, not too much of a very respectable job. The whiskey was good, but the pay wasn't. So he explained to me he was going to this year of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, who used to give his shiur for Balabatim for about 5-10 minutes after davening. Maybe it was 20 minutes, a few minutes after davening, he gave his shiur like Rabbi Rosenbaum's shiur, I guess. And this Ivan didn't understand a word of the shiur. First of all, it was in Hebrew. He was barely learning Hebrew. He was barely knew Hebrew. But let alone, even when he knew the Hebrew, the shiur was much more advanced. But he came every single day to the shiur. Not only did he come to the shiur, what was so strange was he was taking notes. Now, it's one thing to come to a shiur out of respect for the rabbi, you're there. But to take notes during the shiur where you don't understand what he's talking about is quite something which is very unique. You don't see it too often. But Ivan came every day, including the day or the week that they found out that his wife, Leah Leinu, was very sick. She contacted a certain illness in Eretz Yisrael, and she needed day in and day out medical attention. And Ivan, being a good husband, used to look after his wife, except when it came davening and that 15-20 minute shiur time, he went and stayed at the shiur. One of the friends of his that used to go to the shiur, who knew about his wife was sick, went over to Rav Shlomo Zalman and said, Rebbe, I'm not sure if you're aware of it, but his wife is not well. He comes every day to the shiur. He's not providing for her at that time. He doesn't really understand the shiur. Maybe suggest him that it would be better for him to be at home at that time. And Rav Shlomo Zalman, listening to the advice of this student, this younger man, whoever it was that told him, went over to Ivan and mentioned to him, he was sorry to hear that his wife wasn't well. And he suggested that maybe it would be better for him to be at home at that time. Yes, maybe for davening, but immediately he should go home. He should stay for the shiur. Rabbi said, listen to what Ivan responded. Ivan responded, Rabbi, I respect you dearly. And I respect the shiur that you give as well. I don't understand it. But I want to tell you something about Russia. I served inside the Russian army. And the first thing they do, when they would wake us up by roll call, we have to repeat about 50 or 60 of the heads of the Communist Party. By rote, we have to repeat the names. I don't know the names of them. We'll have to ask, check out, you'll give me later on the names of the heads of the Communist Party. 50 or 60 names every single day, repeating. I made a shvua that if I come to Eretz Yisrael and I'm going to start to learn, I might not be able to learn, but I'm going to learn the names of the generals of God's army. And every time I sit inside of a shiur, and you say a name, Abaya, I write down that name. Rava, I write down the name. Rabbi Yochanan, I write down the name. Rabba, I write down the name. Tanoim, any general that you mention. I don't know yet what they say, but I know what they stand for. And that's what I want to relate to. I want to relate to the generals. Rabbi Say, that man might have been a total ish adama, but he was in truth an ish elikim. We could relate to generals too, Rabbi Say. Whether it's the Maida'anis that we start saying in the morning, I was speaking to a number of boys, I asked them, did I say Maida'ani? One boy said to me, Rabbi, I don't even know what Maida'ani is. Someone sitting inside the Beis Medrash right now. Now, I don't know if he was kidding or serious, I think he was serious. But it's something that we have to learn, what Maida'ani is, what Reshus Chachma is. That's the basics. We have the opportunity of knowing the generals. They're called the Amains by davening, Rabbi Say. Those are the generals. We can't daven the whole davening, but at least an Amain. at least in Amenya Heshmei Rabba, at least that much that could demonstrate to us that we are in Isha Elikim. If we choose that path, Rabbi say, that Amir Hashem Halavai, just like Moshe Rabbeinu was called in Isha Elikim, even though at the same time he was in the Shmitzri, we will shtag, we will grow to be also be called by that title of Isha Elikim. A good Shabbos. Tia. Shabbos, it's all. Shabbos, just don't knock over the dust. Shabbos.